Access number 32677, rail 4.
Side 4.
Yeah, so...
We're talking about getting the escape and the food?
Yes, yeah, I'm afraid the food was getting very, very short. And...
Were you hearing from the BBC that the end was in
yes,
coming?
Yes, we did hear. And that was a funny thing. That was because when we did hear about the invasion
for D-Day,
yes, and everybody was excited, you know, they said, oh, it's only going to be a matter of weeks now, you know, we should be out, you know, this and that, yeah. And chaps not arms, when they were going to bed, and they say, hey, George, now what's the first thing you're going to do when you get home? What's the first thing? Now me and you are going to meet, all right, George? That's a promise. Oh yeah, all right. Now he said, I was just going to go in a restaurant, and I was just going up have a slap-up meal. Now he says, now what are you going to have then, George? Well, I think I'll have a couple of eggs, fried bread, chips, and eggs, and bacon, and, you know, we'll have a slap-up meal, he says. What about you? Said, oh, yeah, I think I'll have the same. He said, let's go out and gorge ourselves. And the chap's lying in bed, he says, have you quite finished dinner? Why don't you shut up and get to sleep? And chaps used to get annoyed. To think that people was talking about food, and things were getting very, very tight in the camp where food was concerned, and men were getting irritated, you know, because of the food. I mean, it was bad enough having to go for a walk to the toilet. I mean, when you went for a walk for a toilet, there was a concrete path, and you had to keep on this concrete path. And if you walked on underneath, or in the night, or in the morning, whenever you went, because men had dysentery in the camp, and God knows what, and the searchlight used to pick you up and shine on you, and used to follow you down to the path, along the path, you know, where you're going to the toilet. And I remember one night, when I hate to bring this up, but there it is, just, you want to know what happened in a prison camp, so I'll tell you. So one or two boys went out to the night and came back. And when they opened the door, they had only walked through a cesspit. The camp was absolutely littered with it. They used to have a tanker used to come in and empty the tanks. But this time, for some reason or other, don't know, they didn't empty. And all the sludge all came to the surface. So when the men went down to the toilet, they walked through it. So then they had to stay outside and wash it all off, you know, things like that. But that's what happened. And then another time where we're in the camp, and there were some Russian prisoners of war, and they were out working near the, up near the toilets. And one thing about the Canadians and the Australians, New Zealanders, they all had plenty of cigarettes, and they seemed to get a lot more parcels than we ever had. They seemed to do very well with cigarettes and that, because they had a hut full of cigarettes, what people used to send them. And Americans, you know, some of the stars from Littlewoods used to write to them, you know, this kind of thing, with the photographs, beautiful women, you know. And the artists in the camp was unbelievable. There's one chap I remember, he used to do war series. And he used to sit down and he'd draw a boat all in flames, just black and white. And German aircraft came and down. And it was wonderful, wonderful drawings. And I remember they used to do cartoons. The Red Cross sent us a book, blank pages. So then somebody came up with an idea of putting cartoons in there. So I could copy. I wasn't a bad artist, but I could copy. And I remember the chaps used to come to me and said, hey, will you copy this one in my book? So I used to sit down and copy the drawing in his book. And they give you a couple of cigarettes or something like that for your thing. But these books they used to carry around, and different cartoons of different. Now, when you would say for yourself, well, what kind of cartoons? Well, can you imagine somebody walking out of the prison camp? You know, a man dressed up in uniform, RAF uniform, and they come into the guards, and he says, you know, good morning. And he says, yeah, good morning. And he says, I'm off to the picture house. You know, I said, can you imagine a German guard? I said, you know, opening up the gate. I said, then suddenly realize there's one of the prisoners. But this is what they used to do in the cartoon, you know. And I was in a camp. I must tell you this little part. You can get a laugh at this. I was looking out the window one night, all quiet, peaceful and quiet. Everybody had gone in their huts, and there was these lengths of telegraph posts lying there. I suppose they'd been there for weeks or months or years. I don't know. I said, and all of a sudden, I saw a bunch of lads come out, and said they all ran to this telegraph post. So I said, they all picked it up at the same time. I said, and they ran with it, and somebody opened the door. I said, it was inside the hut. I said, people could say Jack Robinson. And I said, they made their own souls. When they used to get the Red Cross parcels, the strips of metal they used to get, they used to cut them out and make it like a soul, like the teeth. And I said, remember in Roman times when they used to make the souls themselves with a rope on the top and used to turn it round? I think I'd used them in Egypt and places like that. That was their first souls that they ever made, I think. So I said, they started sewing, you know, before long. I said, the Germans found out. I said, I don't think they gave them a chance to sew the first piece out, you know. But they had to pull out, I said, they marched them out, I said. And that was the end of that poem, you know. But there was another time, I remember when in the camp, the British was ill-treating them. The Germans in Egypt. So they decided to take away one of our planks from our beds. So I said, I can't remember how many planks, maybe six, seven planks. So they decided each one, everybody had to give up a plank. So I said, they went along and took out a plank. Little did the Germans know, I said, that when they put them down, I said, the boys was picking them up again and putting them back again. And I said, you know, the Germans could never understand the English. They couldn't trust them. I said, they couldn't trust the English. I said, no way. I said, if a German put in a bunch of keys, I said, they'd die devil. They were devil. So in the long run, I said, life went on in the camp. Oh, then somebody found out.
How long were you there altogether, do you think?
Oh, about 18 months or
18
something
months.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, in the long run, I said, the Germans was giving us some seeds to plant. So I said, they give the hut a little bit of ground. And I used to go to the hut where the German was and get a spade. And I used to go out and dig this little plot of land and put seeds in, you know. And when we finished digging, we had to make sure that the spade went back again. I said, but you don't leave, you didn't take your eyes off the spade, I said, because somebody else would have pinched it, you know. So I said...
Did you manage to grow some food?
No, never grew anything. And, life in the prison camp, oh, they used to come round, just like the BBC on sound, on the wireless. And they used to do plays. And each one, maybe three, maybe four, maybe five, all according, all had scripts. And you just laid on the bed and they read the script out, just like on the BBC stories, and they bring in a taxi driver telling you what it was like to taxi around London. And there were quite a few in there doing exams. The Red Cross got exam papers to them, so they were able to do the exams in the camp, then give them back to the Red Cross and see how they got on, you know. But as they were officers, some got their ranks, they were promoted. But where I was, I mean, as I say, there's all officers, but there was no rank. Everybody was the same, no rank whatsoever. And I always remember there was one fellow at our table that you got used to in the end, and I can't remember what aircraft he was in, bomber, I suppose. And he got badly burned. And he had no hair, no eyelashes, and all his skin was all grafted all on his face. You know, but it was something you had to live with at the table. You didn't stare, you know, you just spoke to him like, and just made out he was a normal person. But I don't know what happened when he got home, and His family found that he lost all his hair, all his eyelashes, and half of his face was all disfigured, his hands. So as you imagine, he must have got burnt, I suppose, in an aircraft. Well, then, going on from the prison camp, they came in one night, and everybody was forced to get up, and everybody had to pack.
Was this about January 1945?
Yes, and when the Russians started breaking in, breaking out, and seeing Heide Krug was very, very close to the Russian border, and the government had warned the Germans that all prisoners of war had to be made safe, and they had to be all protected. But if you read books, which I'm not a great reader, but if you read books, you'll find that the British government never had a clue to do what was going to happen to the prisoners of war. There's so many thousands of them that they just didn't know what to do with them or what to say. And they were afraid the Russians was going to go in and capture the British prisoners of war and take them back to Russia and use them, you know, whole things like that. So the commandant, Hitler, said, and it's written down in books, that all prisoners of war had to be shot. And but the commandants in the prison of war camps, they decided it was not on. They would be answered. They would be an answer for all that. So then they forced us out of the camp and marched us. Well, all I stood up in was my coat and trousers, nothing else. I had nothing. But some managed to take some food with them and all things like that. But we were forced out of the camp and we just marched.
You take your blankets with you?
No blankets. No, nothing. Mm. Nothing. Nothing at all. And we were just forced out of the camp. And we were marched. And day and night, we slept in fields.
Is it snow on the ground?
Oh, yes. Yeah, raining. Rain, snow. And all what we had was what we stood up in. And if it rained, you just dump yourself in the field, and that's where you lay until the morning, and the Germans, you weren't asleep. Germans are roused, and up you got, and you were forced to march again. But I don't think the Germans knew where to go. They didn't know where to take us. But we were just kept marching and marching and marching. And when we did go in, the barns, the first thing the prisoners thought was food. So they hunted around to see what they could steal and give them a chance. They would empty the place, you know, where food was concerned. And as I say, the bit of potatoes, they went into this farm, and there was this small sliding door that slid out just enough to crawl through. And the boys found out there was potatoes in there. So they went in, scrambling to get through, and they come out with their shirts full of potatoes. But then after a while, the Germans found out that they were pinching the potatoes, so then they made them stand up and empty all the potatoes out again. And made them put them back in the hold, I suppose, where the farmer kept his potatoes. But you didn't know where the next meal, you couldn't wash. No such thing as washing, no toilets. There was nothing, absolutely nothing. You just kept walking and sleeping in the open. And one day we were walking along this country road, and in the distance, always remember, it was up a very steep hill, and down the other side, and there was another steep hill. And as we got nearer and nearer and nearer, so we could see this object lying in the road. We had no idea what it was, but gradually, as we got nearer and nearer and nearer, we found it was a dead horse. Don't know how long he'd been there. Didn't know whether he was shot or just died or what. So by the time the boys got there and looked at the horse, they thought to themselves, well, we ain't going to grow hungry anymore. So then they managed to get hold of the Germans with knives and that, and they cut the horse up. And each one that wanted meat took a bit of meat. And I always thought that they could make a film of that, because when they took the meat, and then we marched on, and the Germans took us into the woods, and the boys went into the woods, and the bits of meat they were carrying, they made little bonfires. And you can just imagine how many airmen there was walking. And they made these little bonfires of wood. And some couldn't get them to burn, so they was on their hands and knees, blowing away. And all you could see was smoke, trying to get these fires lit. And there was these men trying to cook their bit of horse meat. Well, what they did, they enjoyed. But then we were forced on again, marching. And gradually, some of the men started disappearing from the column. But the Germans didn't do nothing to stop them. And they warned us. They said, well, you stick together. Because if you stick together, you'll be a lot more safer than you would if you escape. Some couldn't stand it much any longer, being coked up, so they decided to run. But the others stayed together.
Did many fall by the wayside?
Oh, yes. I mean, remember one... I don't know, I always seems to be at the back of the column somehow or other. I always did, always last, and I was at the back of the column. And there was one fellow that carried him, and he was in a bad way. As much as he could do was walk. And these Germans came up behind and said, "Raus, raus," and took off their rifles and started poking us in the back. But they said, "Get up, the crowd, get up," you know. But this fella had the fall, and he fell on the ground, and he was carrying a pack on his back, and they just picked it up and just chucked it in the field. They just threw it in the field, just like that. So we managed to pick him up and struggled with him. But eventually, there was an horse and cart that was in the route, and they pulled him up, put him on this horse and cart, and because that's where the sick was on there. So if you were able to walk, you just walked. But if you were sick and you're not able to walk, then they put you on this horse and cart. They shoved you in the back of the cart, and then when we used to get to the camps. And the chaps used to go out and get straw and pop POW in straw in the fields to make sure that any aircraft flying over let them know it was POWs. And even when we were on the march, walking down the lanes, everything peaceful and quiet, and all of a sudden you could hear aircraft in the distance, and you think, hello, what's going on? And the boys then had a white sheet, and on the sheet they marked POW in big black letters. And it was about 4, maybe 6, carrying this white sheet above their heads. So they went ahead quite a number of yards in front. So if any aircraft did come over, they would recognize, we hope, that it was POWs, but the men never gave them a chance. The road disappeared. Everybody hit them to the side of the road, and the road was empty. And then when they flew over, we just picked ourselves up and carried on again. But that's how life was. And you didn't know where your next meal was coming from. You never washed. To be lousy. Just imagine people wearing their clothes day after day, month after month. And when they come to woods, they used to get the embers. They used to get the embers from a bit of wood and run along the seams of the of their shirts to kill the lice that was in their shirts. So we come against all little things like that. And there was nowhere to wash. You just kept walking as far as the Germans was concerned. You just walked, and I don't know where the Germans was taking us in themselves. But on another occasion there was a very sad occasion, was we were walking along this path, and another group passed us coming the other way. And as they passed us, they had all Red Cross parcels. Everybody had a Red Cross parcels. God, they said, the Red Cross parcels. And everybody was laughing and joking and smiling and puffing away the cigarettes. People were eating chocolate, of course. You know, I said, it was out of the world, out of this world. So they told us where this lorry was, and we walked. Well, instead of walking, we always started running. Mm. And where they got their energy from, I don't know. And gradually, we saw the lorry in the distance, and they were handing them out. So they handed the recorded parcels to us, and we turned around and come back again. So the ones that we saw with the Red Cross pub, they'd already passed us. Mm. So there was about half an hour, three quarters of an hour in front of us. But they come from Fallingbostel, so I read in the paper. And we were making our way back, and there wasn't a care in the world. Everybody had their chocolate, everybody had their cigarette, and, you know, somebody you hadn't seen for months. And I think all the worries was forgotten for 5 minutes.
Beginning of the end.
Yes. And then as we got to this village, I always remember there was a horse tied up. He had a long bit of rope on this horse. He was tied to a post. And it was a green, very brown grass. And all of a sudden, coming from nowhere, all of a sudden, right on top of you, there was two typhoons. And they were sweeping very low, very low. And so we hit the deck, and the horse started running wild. I don't know what happened to the horse. And we just laid there, clutching our Red Cross parcels. And these two aircraft flew over, and they were that low that when they fired the rockets, we could see the puffs from where the rockets had left the aircraft. And within a matter of seconds, minutes, we heard these explosions in the distance. And we thought to ourselves, oh, he must have come across a German convoy or at a railway station or something like that, you know. And eventually we picked ourselves up again, clutching our Red Cross parcels, and went on our way. Well, within about half an hour, we come to a T road. And down at the T road, there were some, I don't know, army boys, I suppose. And they was all shouting for help. Help, help, they were shouting. And as we walked by, some of the men started to stop. But the Germans pushed them on with the butts of the rifle. They wouldn't let them stay. And what happened was that these two typhoons had attacked the column that just had their Red Cross parcels.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And there was quite a number got killed. Quite a number.
After all they'd gone through.
Yeah, after all what they went through. And I think it's called geese or something like that. And their bodies is buried in the churchyard there. Mm. So there was quite a number of chaps who got killed. Quite a number. And they were the same people that passed us, not a care in the world, laughing and joking, enjoying their chocolates, enjoying their cigarettes. And some of those have been prisoners maybe 3 years, three and a half, 2 years, 1 year. And they had to die like that. Mm. So we still carried on, walking. For some reason or other, they seemed to split up. And I was with a group. And I think the Germans must have knew that time was getting very, very close. And they took us to this village. It was a village. And we went into this village, and they found a place they put us into. It was like something like the elderly people would use at a weekend or a Saturday or Sunday to play cards or dance or get together.
Hall.
Yeah, community hall. And they put us in there. It might have no bedroom or nothing. And you just slept on the floor. And where the food was coming to, that was another story. So, I don't know. I always say to myself now, after going through all that lot, what is the most thing that you remember? And I always say to myself, when I woke up in the morning, I'd say, woke up. We didn't sleep, half sleep. And when we come to in the morning, no Germans. Germans had disappeared, and we couldn't believe our eyes. We said, where are they? Nobody here? Nobody here to protect us? Nobody here to... Where are they gone? And we were just left on our own. So, in this village where we were, through the day, there was hundreds and hundreds of troops retreating. Hundreds of them. Some on bicycles with no tires, no tubes, horses in carts, lorries, and they was coming through on practically anything, walking. And all the German people who lived in that village had all white sheets all hanging out of their bedroom windows. And we stood on the corner and watched them. And then we went back to this community hall. And in the back, there was like a courtyard. And we were stood there, and all of a sudden, this lorry runned in. German lorry. And we thought, hello, what do you want? And we stopped and looked. And they chucked a whole pig out on the floor. And the next thing we knew, they'd gone. So the Germans had left the pig. And I thought to myself, well, what do they want to chuck a pig out like that for? So the boys looked and started to think, and before they knew where they finished, they had half a pig cut. And it was cutting pieces off, and they was making little bumpers and enjoying the pig. And I suppose several hours afterwards, another lorry come in. God, we thought he's come for the pig. Come for the pig. You know, he's up. You ain't gotta get a little pig here, you know. Oh, so then the Germans, so then the German passed out, a dead German. Passed out a dead German. But they said a grenade went off. So they asked us to bury it. So then they turned and just went out again. It was cobblestones. The courtyard was all cobblestones. And then when we went back to our billet, that he said, well, but just before that, before the Germans had disappeared, the previous night, we were lying on the floor, and there was this fella, he kept on moaning and groaning. And he was behind this little bar place by himself. And I remember somebody saying, why don't you shut up and get to sleep? Well, the night went on, and in the morning, we woke up. He was dead. So we got him out. And they thought, so what are we going to do? So they thought we'd have to bury him. So outside in the courtyard, just outside, before we got in the courtyard, there was a grass verge. So the boys went down to the shed dinner and managed to get some tools. And they dug a pit and wrapped him around with a blanket. And they buried him, and we stood all around. And then somebody decided to make a cross, so they got up some bits of tree and stuck the cross on top. Well, that was half a day before the Germans disappeared. And then when they brought this German in, the dead German, they thought, come, what are we going to do? You know, so we'll have to bury him because there's nobody else here. So when we wrapped him up and took him down to the shed down below, and we were stood on the corner of the street, and all these troops was all passing through, all on the retreat, because I'd never seen anything like it. And there was a British dispatch rider came up on a motorbike, and he parked on the other side of the road. And me so. He must be British, that chap. So we just stood there, looking, and he walked across. And as he got nearer and nearer, he told me so. Who the hell are you? So when he came up to us, he said to him, who are you? And do you know, nobody could speak. Not one person could open their mouth. And in very words, he says, what have you done? Lost your tongues? I'm asking. He said, who are you? And he said, well, we're not prisoners of war. And he said, what the hell are you doing here? Well, he said, we've just been dumped here. Well, he said, don't you stay here, he said. He said, where are you bidding to? And he said, well, we're not a place here. He said, get in there, he said, out of the way. He said, because the tanks is going to come through in a minute. He said, and there's going to be a hell to play here in a minute. So I said, all right, so. And he said, and one of the boys said, we got a German to bury. German, he said. So we put two and two together. He said, you're not burying him, are you? And he said, what else do I do? Get out there, he said, and grab hold of somebody. Go on, he says. So we went out, and the Germans were retreating, and we said, well, you, I said, back. And he took him back, and he gave him a shovel, and we stood around the grave, and picked his body up, and put the body in, covered it, and the cross that we made for the British chap, they thought it was for the German. So they picked it off and shut it on the German's grave. So the boys did like that. So he took off the cross again. Man, little did they didn't know there was a British boy there, buried there. So they stuck it back again. And then they were free to go. So after that, we went back to our hut. We didn't know what was going to happen. So the chap said, who's with you? And they said, nobody, you're on the wrong. And he said, I said, we want some food. We want some food. And he said, right, we'll send somebody down, he said, to look and see what's happening. And I said, all right. So then, in the meantime, nobody came. And there was a fellow there. He was a South African. And he said, do you fancy going out? He says,